The Pentagon released its budget. What are the big line items requested by the Biden administration? Produced by Defense News and Military Times, this is the Early Bird Brief. Each morning, we bring you the defense and national security news of the day. Also, the Pentagon and VA announced large expansions to in vitro fertilization treatment for troops and veterans. What does this all mean for our defense and security? You'll find out. I'm your host, Simon Perez. Today is Tuesday, March 12th, 2024. First up, the Biden administration released its fiscal year 2025 budget request on Monday. Pentagon reporter Noah Robertson joins the episode to break down the numbers for us. Hey Noah, thanks for joining us. What are some of the big numbers or highlights that caught your attention in this year's budget request?
The overall budget for fiscal year 2025 is coming in at a lower number than expected in last year's budget request. That budget request projected about $860 billion for the entire Pentagon budget. It's actually coming in right under $850 billion, which when accounting for about 2% projected inflation, which is what the department was factoring in this year, is a 1% cut. Now, that being said, the Pentagon's terms for this budget were largely dictated due to outcomes that were outside of its control. These were the terms listed in the Fiscal Responsibility Act, which was a bipartisan deal struck last year between a different Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy of California, and President Joe Biden to avoid a government default, which would have been catastrophic, not just for the military, but the entire nation. That deal capped spending increases, including for the Pentagon, at 1% in the coming fiscal year. And that means that the Pentagon had no leeway in requesting more money. The hardest hit accounts were largely research, development, testing, and evaluation, and also procurement, which came in both at lower than expected numbers. Those were in large part due to specific systems being left out, those that were high dollar, including a nuclear-powered Virginia-class submarine, which they're asking for one fewer than projected, one instead of two. Also, multiple F-35 Joint Strike Fighters, which are each expensive and dealing with their own delays in terms of technology, with a critical tech upgrade being delayed for months at this point.
Currently, we are nearing six straight months of continuing resolutions. How does that play into this budget request?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because this is a confusing year, and not just because the continuing resolutions, though those in large part are the core part of uncertainty facing the government right now and the Pentagon. Congress is 6 months late in passing its Pentagon budget, and that of multiple other parts of the government, too. If it doesn't pass all of its regular spending bills by April 30th, then according to the terms of that deal to avoid a default last year, there will be an automatic across-the-board 1% cut in government spending, which Pentagon leaders worry would be a catastrophe, similar to that of the Budget Control Act, a different sequester, and around the 2013 range. Now, the continuing resolutions, like you mentioned, are in month six. That in large part means that the Pentagon cannot start new programs or increase production. Also, its funding is capped at the last fiscal year's number. So even though the Pentagon's budget request for FY24, which we're in right now, was larger than its spending right now, it can't get up to the numbers that it would like to. And even if Congress were to pass a Pentagon budget in this month, which is something that seems somewhat unlikely given some of the dysfunction on the Hill, then they would have a shorter time period, the Pentagon, to go and spend the money that they actually get, meaning that in all likelihood, some of it would not be able to go toward the programs that the Pentagon intends.
Another important story, the Department of Defense and Veterans Affairs announced major expansions of in vitro fertilization treatment. Pentagon Bureau Chief Megan Myers joins us live from the Pentagon. Megan, could you take us through this expansion? What are the new policies on IVF treatment, and how do they compare to previous rules.
So for service members specifically, this expands the eligibility for IVF covered by TRICARE, which is the military's health insurance program. Well, first of all, you do have to be eligible, and the big loophole to be able to be eligible is that your infertility has to be service connected. So it has to be because of some sort of illness or some sort of injury that you incurred while in uniform. Once you've met that hurdle, it used to be that you had to be a married couple within DOD to get IVF. So single troops couldn't do IVF, unmarried couples couldn't do IVF. And in the VA, you had to be a married heterosexual couple. So it was even tighter restrictions. And beyond that, you could only use your own sperm and eggs. So if for some reason your infertility affected your ability to make eggs or to make sperm, you were ineligible for IVF altogether. So what has changed now is all of those gates have been dropped, essentially. So while you still have to have, your infertility still has to be service connected, if you are, single, unmarried, an unmarried couple of, male, female, whatever, all of those hurdles are dropped. And if you have a service-connected infertility issue, you are eligible to get IVF through either your VA benefits or your TRICARE benefits if you're still on active duty.
And what spurred those changes to the department's policies?
So last August, so just a few months ago, basically, Yale Law School, which has a veterans legal clinic, filed a lawsuit on behalf of the National Organization for Women in New York City, saying that these policies that discriminated against the type of person or the marital status of the person seeking IVF were illegal. And in January, DOD and VA filed a motion with the court saying, hey, we agree, and before this lawsuit goes any further, we're just going to update our policies. So that happened in January, and the policies were just updated in early March. What they did not comply with, which the lawsuit also seeks, is to drop any bars for eligibility at all for IVF in the military and the VA. So that includes any fertility being service connected. What this lawsuit seeks is that anybody who is having fertility issues for any reason in the military, including, women who waited longer into their careers to start their families and therefore are not as fertile as they would have been in their early 20s, this lawsuit seeks to have IVF covered for them as well.
Also on your radar for today, the Air Force's budget for the next fiscal year is leaning into research and development, but trimming fighter jet procurement. For more on this, Air Warfare reporter Stephen Losey joins the episode. So Stephen, what does the next budget request from the Air Force look like? What are some of the big numbers?
For the Air Force as a service alone, they're looking at $188 billion budget for fiscal 2025 in their proposal. That's a $3 billion increase over the proposal from last year, but that really shakes out to only about a 1.6% increase, which top Air Force officials noted doesn't even really keep up with inflation. Part of what's going on here is the Fiscal Responsibility Act that Congress passed last year that places some caps on the growth of defense spending. So the Air Force is trying to operate within this tough fiscal environment, and there are some trade-offs they've had to make as a result.
And in your reporting, you mentioned that procurement is going to be affected in that budget request. What items are looking like they're going to be the most affected?
That's right. Procurement funding for the Air Force in 2025 would be $29 billion, which is about a $1.6 billion cut. That's resulting in fewer fighter jet purchases. The Air Force had been planning, hoping to buy 48 F-35 fighters. They're requesting instead only 42 F-35s, as well as 18 F-15 EX fighters, when they had been hoping to ask for 24 of those Eagle II fighters. Now, that's also going to result in a cap on the total number of F-15 EX fighters at 98 in all, when previously they had been thinking they were going to have a fleet of 104 of the Eagle II fighters. Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall talked about some of the trade-offs they had to make, and that ended up boosting R&D funding by about $1.5 billion to $37.7 billion. the Air Force is trying to invest in future capabilities that might bear fruit in years to come to counter advanced capabilities from peer adversaries, particularly China. What that's going to mean is an additional $815 million for the Next Generation Air Dominance program. That's the Air Force's future fighter system that they're now trying to work out. That's going to bring spending on NGAD to more than $2.8 billion. Accompanying that is a program called Collaborative Combat Aircraft, or CCA. These are the autonomous drones that the Air Force wants to fly alongside the NGAD fighters or F-35 fighters. They're going to get $559 million in R&D funding to keep developing and prototyping the air vehicle for the CCA program, which would be a $166 million boost. And there's another $116 million in the budget that would help the CCA program test its autonomous capabilities and for some experimentation programs to kind of figure out how the Air Force might use these kinds of drone wingmen. The Air Force is also proposing 250 aircraft retirements, which it says would let it save $2 billion in fiscal 25. That would include 56 of the A-10 Warthogs, which the Air Force has been pushing to retire for several years now, as well as 65 F-15 Cs and Ds, 26 F-15 Es that have a less capable engine, as well as 11 F-16s. The Air Force is also taking another swing at retiring 32 F-22 Raptors. Now, these are the Block 20 F-22s that it says would cost too much money to make combat capable. So there's a lot of aircraft that they're trying to retire to free up resources, to free up airmen, so they can bring on newer capabilities, redirect airmen who might be maintaining older aircraft so they can maintain new F-35s, as well as freeing up space in the budget to work on future fighters.
And now here's some other stories we're hearing chirps about. In case you missed it, the U.S. military said Sunday it flew in forces to beef up security at the U.S. Embassy in Haiti and allow non-essential personnel to leave. In case you missed it too, President Joe Biden on Saturday signed a $460 billion package of spending bills approved by the Senate. He did it in time to avoid a shutdown of many key federal agencies, including the Department of Veterans Affairs. Meanwhile, lawmakers are negotiating a second package of bills, including defense, in an effort to have all federal agencies fully funded by a March 22nd deadline. Also, a Pentagon study released Friday that examined reported sightings of UFOs over nearly the last century found no evidence of aliens or extraterrestrial intelligence. And a U.S. Army vessel carrying equipment to build a temporary pier in Gaza headed to the Mediterranean on Sunday. And on this day in history, in 1947, President Harry Truman articulated what became known as the Truman Doctrine. He asked Congress to provide military and economic aid for Greece and Turkey, both of which were facing communist threats. That's it for us this morning. To get more top stories and breaking news, go to defensenews.com/EBB to subscribe to the Early Bird Brief newsletter. Please give us a like, rating, and a comment wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to follow us on social media at defense_news and at Military Times. The Early Bird Brief is hosted and produced by me, Zimone Z. Perez. Today's episode featured stories by Noah Robertson, Megan Myers, and Stephen Losey. Our editor-in-chief is Mike Gruce. Have a great day.